today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
This sounds like rock and or roll.
All right, Patrick, so yesterday we were talking with the guys from Demolition Means Progress, who will be at Suburbs Fest in Chicago, night three, August 6th, Saturday, August 6th at the Hidden Cove. And today we have another band from that same bill of...
It's amazing.
From the stable of artists. We have the Stickarounds here on Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And so we have three guys from the Stickarounds, and we'll just let them introduce themselves, all right? So, Matt.
Hey, I'm Matt Carlson. I play guitar and sing in the Stickarounds.
I'm Jeff. I play guitar and sing in the Stickarounds as well.
All right.
I'm Ian. I play bass. I also, along with the rest of the guys in the band, do a fair amount of the heavy lifting on our record production. And I do end up usually playing a little bit of six string on the records, but I'm a bass player, let's be honest.
Okay. And there are a couple other band members who are not here today. Do you want to give them a shout out?
Yeah. Jason Lantrip is our lead guitar player, and he sings a lot of harmonies, and once in a while we let him front a song. And our steady and reliable drummer, Joel Kuiper, better known as Colonel.
Colonel.
Rounds right. out the outfit.
Yeah, we'll have to get everyone have to get to know Colonel when you come to the show. Absolutely.
Colonel will get to know you. That's how that works, Jim. That's
right. I know this from experience. I've seen the Stickarounds play, as I mentioned in a previous episode. Saw them play in the Toledo suburb of Maumee. And that was a lot of fun. And I got to tell you, Patrick, what's really going to blow you away about these guys, and to all the listeners who can make it, you got a three guitar attack with this band.
I love that. Yes.
Right? So before we get farther into it, let me just ask you that. I mean, what does that bring to the band? And how did that come together? A lot of bands don't have three guitars playing at the same time.
I'm going to let Jeff take this one.
Yeah. When I was looking for people to play in the Stickarounds, my only friends were guitar players. And I definitely wanted to spend more time with Jason and Matt. I'm going to move while my dog is being a jerk.
No, we love dogs.
Hi, Pilot.
We love dogs.
Yeah.
When I was first looking to put together a band before we even had the name Stickarounds, I knew I wanted to spend more time with Jason and Matt. And so they were the first two people I approached, and they were both guitar players. And so I asked them what they wanted to do. We kind of talked about direction and things like that. I knew I wanted it to be more of a power pop thing. And I know plenty of power pop bands that make the three guitar approach work. And we talked about it a little bit, what each of us should have as far as guitar responsibilities. But I feel it happened fairly organically, where I was just kind of the crunch guy, Matt was the jangle guy, and Jason would handle all the lead parts. Mm-hmm. And we just, after practicing together for several years, we just kind of figured out our spots. And we do a pretty good job, I think, sticking in our worlds and making them all mesh together.
Yeah. I think, just to kind of follow up on that, I think one of the things that we sort of learned how to do along the way was that fairly early on, the three of us learned how to sing pretty well together, and that came pretty naturally. And then we just kind of took that philosophy toward our guitar playing. Hmm. So it was who's carving out space, making sure we're not covering the same sort of real estate, and figuring out a way to sort of make them seem those three guitar parts or those three vocals should be greater than the sum of their parts if we do it right. And so that's sort of what I think I always think we're striving for.
Interesting.
That's interesting. So Patrick, in your band, how many guitar players?
Oh, we just got the one.
Just the one. Yeah, one.
Yeah.
So is it from your perspective, is it easier or harder to play with other guitarists?
From my perspective?
Yeah.
It's harder for me personally because I am very undisciplined as a guitar player, and I need some space to mess up. And
neither of these guys know what that's like at all.
No.
It's always challenging for me because I always feel like I've either got to take a role where I'm told exactly what to do. Like, now occasionally we do play a couple of songs with two guitars, and I know exactly what Andy wants me to do, right? He wants me to be here and there and not be loud here and do that, and I'm really good with that. But otherwise, I can't imagine trying to play with me, because I'm never in tune, and I don't do the same thing twice ever. So
I joined the band in about 2017, and coming in playing bass, it was an adjustment. I've never played in a band with that many guitars.
Yeah, I bet.
And I'm not a quiet bass player. I like big, punchy rock and roll bass guitar, you know? Mm-hmm. And that means I'm filling up a bunch of space that definitely a lot of what Jeff is doing too. Like, he and I, right. Like, it took us a while, I think, to sort of just feel it out. And I do think we've kind of got it dialed in just by listening and just by playing a whole load.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the name of the game. It's reps, you know?
Yeah. So I bring this all up because I want listeners to understand that these guys are going to blow the roof off the place. All right. So nice. Be ready for that. All right. So there's that. Now, before we get too far into this, for listeners who may not be familiar with the Stickarounds, is there a particular song we could insert here that would be a good sort of starting point for people?
I think right now, if I was going to pick a song that I think encapsulates a number of the things that we do well, that's fairly recent, I would probably go with Ode to Kid Marine from our most recent EP.
Hmm. I'm with you on that one, Matt.
I feel like that kind of is an example of, I think that showcases a bunch of the really cool stuff that Jason does without getting showy. The harmony vocals are superb. And the rhythm section's kind of hitting it on all cylinders. And that just feels like, at the moment, that kind of feels like the one that would be a good place to start.
That's my favorite. Cool. I'm drunk again, listening to Kid Marine. Sitting on the couch, staring at a TV screen. That whole EP, though, you can't miss. There's four singles on that EP.
It's great. You know, and it's interesting. I was going to say, too, with three guitars, and then you look at these four songs, and the longest one is only 3 minutes and 13 seconds. So those parts that you're playing are obviously very compact, right? How thought out are each of those parts that you guys put together when you record?
I don't want to speak for either of these guys, especially as they're the primary songwriters, but I will say that one conversation we've had a ton in terms of picking songs and making records is the old Pete Townsend adage that a pop song is 2 minutes 50.
Right.
And we shoot for that. And it really works. Mm-hmm. We all go over, obviously, and there's some stuff we do that's a lot longer. But to me, that's the first thing that speaks to what you're asking about. I'll let the songwriters address the rest. But
And Matt and I don't solo.
not as a choice, but out of ability and aptitude.
Yes. Yeah, that's why we needed Jason in our band. We knew he could fill that
when you need a solo.
Yeah.
So Jeff earlier mentioned power pop, and you just talked about song length and how important that is to sort of a pop sensibility. We talked with Matt earlier about his Guided by Voices obsessions. So do you guys all have kind of the same basic philosophy of what makes great rock and roll and pop music?
I would say that no. Matt and I certainly are on the same page on much of it. I think Jason goes farther afield with his psych stuff that he's really into, psych and swirly kind of stuff. Ian's considerably younger than the rest of us, and so he approaches it kind of from his age level, what he grew up with. So that's a little bit different. Joel, our drummer, is the wild card because he tends to refer to himself as a Pollyanna because he is forgiving of everything. He loves pretty much anything that has even remotely a pop hook to it. and so I would say that it's probably a good thing that Matt and I are the primary songwriters because we tend to approach it in very similar ways. We know how long we want a song to be. We know how we want it structured. So yeah, Matt and I work well together in that respect.
I think that's absolutely true. I also think we've gotten better in the last few years about maybe not trying to stick too much within the rules of quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, power pop.
Yeah.
We've learned to kind of reach out to other things that we love. We all have pretty kind of remarkably large, almost ridiculously so, record collections. I mean, Jeff and I both own over 3,000 pieces of vinyl easily. And like, we've culled stuff lately. So like, we listen to a ton of music and it's all different stuff. And so like, as we've worked on stuff in the last couple of years, you can see like, Jason and I will be on the same page and take something in a slightly more dream pop or shoegaze direction. Jeff will bring a song and you will see his country songwriter roots in there. I've brought a couple of things where you can tell that I grew up just on the way the changes work. I grew up on, you know, folk music and 60s pop. And mm-hmm. So you can kind of, if you take a minute, you can kind of look and see where each of us sort of came from, where the Venn diagram overlaps, and then where it differs in adulthood. And I think as we explore that, we get more interesting as a band, at least from my perspective of making music, we get more interesting.
When you guys first started playing together back at the beginning, were there cover songs that you all sort of knew and you played to like kind of get started? Or was it always, you know, like, here's an original, I want to play for you guys and see what you could do?
Absolutely. We had about as many covers as we did originals.
Oh, cool.
Those first few years, you know, The Who, Joe Jackson, Elvis Costello, you know, pretty standard power pop stuff that we were trying to do. And the more prolific Matt and I became, the covers kind of fell by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
We do still have a handful of them that we pull out at shows. But something Matt and I have been talking about is bringing back a few of those. Oh. Covers, because they are just so much fun to play.
Yes.
A lot of the covers we chose are not things that the general public would recognize instantly anyway.
Oh, cool.
Until we told them, oh, hey, this is an Elvis Costello song.
Yeah.
What's really fun for me is when we play something that I think of as sort of like not a famous song by maybe a famous band.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see two or three people sort of perk up.
Yeah,
one of the first shows we ever did, we played at a joint here in Lansing that's no longer a live music venue. And we had a friend of ours there who is significantly younger than we are. And we played Victoria by the Kinks. And I looked out into the crowd and I could see him singing along to every word. And I was like, he's even cooler than I thought he was. You know, so it's you play a song that maybe feels like a little bit of a secret. And the people in the room who get it are the ones you want to go have a drink with after the set's over.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly true with what has hung on the handful of covers that we do play. Like, yeah, it's a Cheap Trick song, but it's not one that my mom's going to recognize from here on.
Yeah, we're not playing Surrender.
Right. Yep. And it's, you know, the Realists who put two songs out ever. You know, that you, and so it's like, yeah, if you've got record nerds in the crowd, they're going to know some of this. So it doesn't feel like we're playing covers per se, because it's not like here's Mustang Sally, you know, it's none of that crap.
Yeah. Right. It's not a wedding. So, you don't have to play what's on somebody's list. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. We all decided long ago that we were never going to play Mustang Sally ever.
Is that right? Yeah. A list of covers we won't play instead of the ones we will. Yeah.
Like, I think one of the real tests of patience and tact that we have in a band when we do play covers is that an entry, especially if you play something that's a little more obvious, that is an entry for people to come and kind of double down on that idea. And then eventually you're being asked, you know, so you could play Margaritaville, right?
Right.
You're like, that's not the world in which I want to have to live. I already have a job.
Right. That's a good point. It's a very good point.
So one point of clarification I want to make sure the listeners understand. Matt mentioned Lansing. These guys are from Michigan. I don't think I had that up top. Even though we're playing in Chicago, these guys are from Michigan.
That's right.
And big Tigers fans, I believe. And so I just want to mention that too. All right. Now, I want to circle back on something Jeff said about Ian being younger and maybe having a different music perspective based on era. So, Ian, talk a little bit about that. Like, where are you coming from and how do you see it differing from these guys?
I don't know. I think a lot of what we do is in that realm of the overlap of the Venn diagram, you know? And I think Matt or Jeff used that phrase earlier. So, you know, there is a lot of the stuff. I mean, I'm 39 years old. So I was, you know, 18 when the turn of the millennium. And so, like, yeah, I listen to a lot of stuff that is just very different. The only thing I might call a point of contention is Jeff hates Weezer. And Weezer, at least those first couple records for me, are just, they're just seminal albums. And that's true for a lot of people my age. And it's okay. There's no true animosity here. It's just, I like something that he doesn't. And maybe I bring in, you know, a little bit something in terms of how I phrase a particular riff behind a guitar part that is inspired by that. But I think we are all far more leaning on the stuff we have in common than the stuff that we don't. Yeah. It's also, you know, these guys being a little bit older, it's like, you know, Jeff and Matt can talk AM Gold way more than I can. Like, I okay, I know what that means. And like, I recognize a handful of songs. By the influence of hanging around with these guys, I now own a couple of records. But that's not a thing that I have a language in. It's not a thing that I grew up listening to. I grew up, you know, in the 90s and aughts, right, listening to rock radio, my dad's record collection, and then whatever was on alternative radio. When I was getting Canadian alternative radio, so I heard, you know, Sloan and the Tragically Hip from there. And then college radio when I started at Michigan State University. It doesn't end up being that big of a thing. That's that big of a difference, I feel like. Like, we do like some different things, and occasionally they'll make references that I don't follow. And then I just look at them like they're a bunch of old farts, because they are.
Okay, side note, because Jim and Patrick, you guys are roughly of the same generation as me and Jeff, right?
Yeah. I believe so, yes.
All right, so side note, we took a trip where we went and played three breweries up north in early April. And at one of those stops in a hotel room, we made Ian watch the two-part episode of What's Happening, where rerun... bootlegs the Doobie Brothers show.
Yes.
Okay.
I remember
it
well.
Here's the thing.
That was the most What's Happening I've ever watched. Here's those two episodes.
There's a group of 45-year-old dudes and older right now who are literally sitting in their car, like, doing the double fist thing, like, I forgot all about that, right?
I'm going to go watch it on YouTube.
And that's exactly what the four of us were like, because we'd been making jokes about it for weeks, and then somebody was like, hey, did you guys know this is on YouTube? And it was fun to watch it, and every few minutes just glance over at Ian at, like, how, like, this was completely lost on him. This was like trying to explain Watergate to a potato. It was unbelievable.
That's beautiful.
All right. Any other old guy stuff we should talk about? Or, okay. So,
there's one thing that I always think about whenever the music comes on. Is Tracy Chapman, and like Tracy Chapman's Fast Car came on once when we were like driving home from a gig, and I'm like, I'm kind of like, I didn't think Jeff was that into it because it was on his iPod. Mm. I was like, really? Jeff has Tracy Chapman on here, and he goes, dude, I love this record. This came out, what was that, senior year of high school for you, Jeff?
That sounds about right.
And to me, this was a record that my dad played when I was a kid. So, like, I heard that record all the time in the car with my dad. But I was like, I did not expect that to be something that Jeff was super into. And it turns out all five of us absolutely love that record.
Oh, that's funny.
But it comes from a totally different place, because for me, it's like, it's something I grew up as a kid with a little bit of nostalgia almost listening to it. And for Jeff, it was very much a thing of the time when he was listening to it as something that was, you know, important music at the time, which it was.
Interesting.
But I didn't have that perspective on it at all.
Interesting.
The late 80s.
You get a fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove.
Okay, so tell us about more about the Stickarounds and how you guys, you know, got together. Or can you give us sort of a quick, you know, band bio?
I used to be in a honky-tonk band. Nice. And I wanted to switch up gears. And so I had been listening to a lot of stuff we would consider power pop at the time. And I just decided, okay, this might be a new direction for me. And so I just literally went up to Matt and Jason and said, hey, you guys want to start a power pop band? And they were like, that sounds like a lot of fun. Yes. So we went through a couple of drummers, a couple of bass players early on before we found the current lineup, which is the best band I think I've ever been part of.
Agreed.
started booking gigs where I could, places I knew from booking with my old country band. Mm-hmm. Of course, not all of those places would have been appropriate for the Stick Arounds, but I knew a handful that were, and we kind of started with that. Our first gig was at White's Bar up in Saginaw, which is a club that does live original music 7 days a week.
Wow.
Which is unheard of, really. I don't know. I mean, it just kind of snowballed from there. But it really has taken, it's taken nearly 15 years for us to get to where we are now. And like Matt talked about earlier, starting to open our sound up a little more to other possibilities, not trying to stay with that strict power pop thing, mm-hmm. has only served our songs better. Because I think we all have knowledge of each other enough and of the music we like enough that we can say, here's what's going to work, here's what's not going to work. And it's not that it's not going to work at some point in the future with one of these songs. It's just not going to work right now for our progression. I find it incredibly easy to work with all of these guys. Everybody has ideas. Everybody contributes. And that's the way I prefer it.
And you said earlier, Jeff, that, you know, you talked about how much of this is just hard work, right? But for me, one of the things that I keep coming back to is that that hard work is all stuff that exists outside of the five of us in a room playing music together. It feels like something we're doing, and it is work, but it's not like it's, you know, laborious or difficult. It's just a process, and we've just gotten so good at that. And then you have all this outward stuff, booking shows and meeting bands and maybe trying to get coverage for your record or whatever. But like, what happens in a room with the five of us, that's the best part. There's so much we don't have to say because it's all just understood by doing it time and time again.
It's a huge thing I find about playing in a rhythm section with Joel, Colonel, our drummer. He and I have over the years sort of built this rapport. He doesn't play like any drummer I know, and it wasn't the easiest thing to adapt to. But you drop another drummer, and we've had one gig since I've been in the band that Joel couldn't make, and we had someone sit in, and it felt so weird to me.
I bet, yeah.
Because Joel has this 2 and 4 that just hit behind the beat, just this tiniest bit. That's part of our feel. We've built that into our sound. And it's so much of how he and I play off of each other, which then it's got this feel. And you bring somebody who is square on the beat, and it's a totally different feel. So I feel like that's the stuff that we've got down where it's like, we don't have to discuss that anymore. I know how I have to react to him to get the most out of what we're doing and to support what the other guys are doing the most. And I think from a rhythm section perspective, that's always my goal. How do I serve the song? How do I support the song and what the singer and everybody else is doing? And those questions are absolutely the stuff that it's like, if it's not second nature, we don't have to talk about it at least. We all kind of have internalized it. It was not easy. And the hard work of booking shows is mostly on Matt and Jeff, which I thank God that they're the ones doing it, because I don't want to do it.
To be fair, we don't want to do it either. So, but yeah. The other thing too that Ian kind of touched on is he talked about that, you know, if it's not second nature, we don't have to talk about it. One of the things that we don't talk about, but that's always kind of at the root of what we do, is whatever decision we make isn't made out of ego or personal preference. It's what is in the best interest of the song, and then what are the best songs that we can share right now. And so it's not about, you know, Jeff wrote this and Matt wrote this, and therefore we're obligated to play it. We go through the process, we build it up, we do our thing with it. It turns into something, and then it's either worth really digging into and sharing with people, or it gets saved for later, or it gets put aside for another project, or it just gets abandoned. Mm-hmm. But every decision we make in this band is based on what's going to be the best thing for that song, and how does that represent who we are as a group of musicians.
Well, I was going to ask, how much recording have you done? Let the listeners know, like, what you have out there that they can hear.
So we put out a live record in 2016 called The Stick Arounds Mystery Garage that we recorded over the course of 2 nights. The idea behind that was really that we had these songs, almost all of which Jeff had written. There were 12 songs, and Jeff wrote 10 of them. And we'd had fits and starts where we tried to make this record on our own, and it just wasn't working. And so we just decided to get a hold of a buddy. He does recording and live production, and he had a space. And so we got a bunch of bands, and we literally recorded the same set 2 nights in a row, and then we put it out. And then 2 years later, we did Ways to Hang On, which was a completely different thing, which was kind of this sort of very studio-based 10-song record. And then we did a record called Hot Singles Club, which is in 2019, we put out one free song a month every month for the whole year. And then in 2021, we put out Waiting for the Click, which is our most recent EP.
Okay.
Which is those four songs that we were talking about.
Yep.
And people can hear this stuff on, you know, the major streaming services and, yeah, and that sort of thing. And then
Bandcamp, Spotify, Apple yeah. Music.
We would encourage people to hit Bandcamp.
Yeah.
Supporting artists is a huge deal for all of us. And I think from a perspective of having people listen to our stuff, that's why we're out there on streaming. But if you really want to support an artist, go buy their music. And Bandcamp is always a great venue for it. If you like physical media, hit our website. We will send you an LP. It really does make a difference in our bottom line, and it makes it easier for bands to keep doing it.
What is the website people can go to if they want to buy?
You can go to phonophorerecords.com if you want to buy physical merch, and there are links there for all the digital versions on our Bandcamp page. phonophorerecords.com.
Okay.
And then you can and there's stuff there by basically everything the Stickarounds have done, and then my other band, Harborcoat, and some other bands that are on our label. Any of that stuff you enjoy. If you don't have any money to share, you can always give us a follow on Bandcamp and the other social media outlets and share it with friends. You know, that's how you grow this kind of thing. It's a real word-of-mouth war.
We played our cheap guitars, shouted songs at the night to frickin' shine even back. I gaze up at the sky, I imagine you smile and wonder where you are now. 20 summers.
You guys, do you have a set schedule where it's like every Tuesday night at 7:30 arrive having eaten, you know, and practice? Or is it just, oh, we've got a bunch of shows coming up, or we got some new songs, like we'll get together three times in a week? Or how do you guys work that?
Monday nights are our set practice time.
Okay.
Typically, we take a couple months in the summer off, June and July, for family time, family vacations, things like that. And
sure.
We typically take December off as well. But that's kind of the only time we veer away from our regular Monday night practices.
Okay.
I mean, with some variation here and there, if somebody has something come up, we'll take a Monday off. But
the other thing, too, to kind of remember for listeners who kind of aren't doing this, we spend almost all of our social time with other people who are in bands, and we're all kind of living the same lives. But doing a band at this level, we've all got full-time jobs where we're working 40, 50 hours a week. Ian's the only one in the band who doesn't have children. We've all got different obligations that you have about, you know. And then we're trying to make our own records, book our own shows, play our own shows, and practice once a week. Mm. And we make it work, but we make it work because there are five people who have made a commitment that they're going to invest almost an unreasonable amount of time and effort into a thing because we love it so much.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you guys this. You mentioned earlier, you know, some of the similarities you have in terms of your music interests, some of the differences, that sort of thing. But did you all grow up in Lansing or in Michigan?
We all grew up in Michigan for the most part. I mean, Ian was born in Indiana, but we all grew up in Michigan.
Okay. Is there anything you can pinpoint in the Stickarounds where you would say, like, this is like the Michiganness of this band?
Mm. I think one of the things I have noticed, and I don't know if I would refer to it as Michiganness, but I definitely would say that we have like a Midwest work ethic. We do a pretty good job of not getting too full of ourselves and too big for our britches. We have realistic expectations about what we're going to accomplish and where we're going to play and who we're going to play with. And we have sought out other bands who behave that way.
Mm.
Yeah. And so the bands that we tend to find in places like Chicago and Milwaukee and Detroit tend to be down to earth, hardworking, have realistic expectations, and really understand that this is about living in the moment as opposed to, you know, what's going to happen when somebody catches on or finds out or makes me a star. Like, the work is what's important.
In Lansing, Michigan, in particular, we're pretty spoiled. We have a really vibrant and supportive music scene in Lansing.
Hmm.
And it's not just the rock guys we hang out with in general. It's everybody. The hip-hop scene here is fantastic.
It's remarkable.
we hang out with guys who play in punk bands and doom metal, and the community, they've embraced us. I mean, we're older than your average musician in Lansing, but they treat us like we're part of the crew. Everybody goes to everybody's shows. When we go to other cities and talk to people about their music scenes, we tell them about Lansing, they get jealous.
It doesn't hurt that we're not a huge city. It is something, yeah, we're really, really fortunate to have. And I think it's true of the bands that we work with and play with that are from out of town. It's like, if you can be a great band, but if we don't like being around you and we don't like working with you and figuring out like how we're going to put on the best show we can, I'm not sure I want to play another show with you. I'd rather pick the bands that I like that are also people I like. I don't want to put on a show with people I don't want to talk to.
Yeah.
I never do that.
And within the Lansing music scene, there are very few people that we just don't want to hang out with. I mean, that those numbers are very, very low. We're lucky.
All right, Patrick, you have any other questions?
No, are we going to ask them, we asked? Okay.
Yeah. All right, so we like to end interviews with musicians often by asking them to name a song, any song in the world that you think is a perfect song. And then we add it to a big playlist we have going, and we call the playlist Perfect Pop, but, it can be whatever, really. We just like the way that sounds. But any song out there that you think is perfect, and so... Ian wants to go first, and while he goes and describes his song, you guys can be thinking. It doesn't have to be, don't overthink it. It doesn't have to be your all-time favorite song or anything like that. Just an example of a song you think is really well.
I've already got mine.
All right, so Ian, go first.
Yeah, my hand went up right away because there is a band we played with in Chicago recently called Half Catholic. They're from Rockford, Illinois, and they're just stellar. They're really nice dudes, nice. And they have two singles out that are digital, available everywhere as far as I know. And I'm going to go up and nominate their song called What's Good Is Gone. Okay. And I know Matt and I have been chewing hard on that one lately, and so Jeff says too. So,
what do you like about that song?
It hits everything we like about rock and power pop. Cool guitar sounds and this guy with a great sense of melody and lyric, and just it's got this cool groove. Top to bottom, I think that song is just unbelievably fantastic. And that and cool. their other single have both been in heavy rotation for me lately.
Very nice. Cool. Very okay. cool.
All right, Jeff was up next, I think.
Yeah, I'm going to pick The Fall of the World's Own Optimist by Amy Mann.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I think that song is perfect. I think that album is perfect. In fact, she does not have a bad album, and I'm struggling to think if she even has a bad song.
Mm.
She is about the greatest pop rock writer of my lifetime, I would say.
Interesting.
Either her or Gary Lewis.
Yeah. Good one.
Okay.
Good pick there. What is it about that particular song, though, Jeff?
The structure, the lyrical content is just so well thought out. And the way that the lyrics lay on top of the music is, it just feels really comfortable. And her instrumentation and the choices she makes in the studio are just things I wish that I had stored in my brain to do, but I don't think about them at the time.
Got it. Okay.
Very cool.
All right, Matt, did you come up with a song?
I did. I'm going to double off of Jeffrey and pick a song by Amy Mann's husband, Michael Penn.
Ah.
It's impossible to choose just one Michael Penn song, but for whatever reason, over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been really obsessed with one of his records called Mr. Hollywood Jr. 1947. And I've loved this record for a long time. And the first song on that record is a song called Walter Reed. And the record's kind of a sort of a weird, loose concept record about a guy who gets out of Walter Reed after suffering PTSD in World War II.
Hmm.
And there's all these weird little pop interlude things. And yet the sort of concept of the record never gets in the way of how great the individual songs are. And this first song, Walter Reed, is basically like, what's next? There's a line about what he refers to as graduation day, where like, he's all better now, so he's got to go out into the world. And there's these beautiful, like, detuned mellotrons that kind of carry this little counter melody, and the backing harmonies are amazing. And, like, the whole thing is just this beautiful, it's not produced by John Bryan, but it's clearly influenced by that production style. And so it's kind of similar to those Amy Mann records that Jeff was talking about. And I think it's really this lovely kind of combination of this beautiful, well, what's the Tom Waits thing that, beautiful melodies telling me terrible things.
Yeah.
That's a thing for which I'm just an absolute sucker.
Totally.
And in this particular case, the sonic packaging is so beautiful, and the lyrical content in all of these songs is so kind of dark and dire, but it doesn't have to be. You can see that at a sort of top view level and just go, wow, this is super catchy and beautiful, and I love this. It incorporates sort of like 60s Baroque pop and some AM gold stuff, and then there's like a 90s aughts indie rock vibe to it. It's perfect. That whole record's just amazing to me.
That's great. Wow. Wonderful.
This is incredible, Jim. Yeah. This is like three songs that have been named that I've never heard.
I know. I'm so excited.
And they're
about
perfect
this.
Pop. It's really incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. They did just
so great.
Say like in my room or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right.
All right. Thanks very much, guys. The stick
Thanks,
around.
It's a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us. It was a blast.
Yep.
Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Stick Rounds will be appearing at Suburbs Fest on the third night, August 6th in Chicago.
Can't
at the
wait.
Hidden Cove. We got three bands. We have Cutest Nuisance, Demolition Means Progress, and the Stick Arounds. And I asked Matt, you know, could they play for, let's say, more than an hour? And he was like, oh, God, yes, we could play for more than an hour. So
no yeah. problem.
I mean,
yeah. we rarely get asked to do that, but we can.
We yeah. can. yeah. I mean, if you want us to play well for more than an hour, we might have to put some work in, but we can play for more than an hour right now.
Yeah.
Playing well is not a requirement.
I don't think, no, well, I don't think the word no. well ever came up in the conversation.
Nope. Okay.
So that's
no.
fine.
All right, guys.
All right.
You
thanks
guys
are, very much.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. This was
thank you, guys.
Let people know for all the details about Suburbs Fest, go to suburbspod.com and click on the that's Suburbs right. Fest banner. Suburbs. And there's all the details for all three nights in Chicago. And then later in the year, we're going to do another three nights in the D.C. area.
Yep.
Nice.
And I know these guys are going to have so much fun in Chicago that then they're going to want to come out to D.C.
I think it's probably going to
happen. Listen, you make the invite, and we'll start having conversations. I'm not even joking about that.
All right. Talk. All right.
I think the only night we've not had fun in Chicago is the night I got a P ticket. So
The rest of us had fun.
I mean, I even had fun the night we played at Reed's and I fell over on the monitor. I mean, that was...
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
You think you had fun. You don't remember most of it.
Well,
it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us has been...
Matt Carlson of the Stick Arounds.
Jeff Gower.
And Ian Walker, also of the Stick Arounds.
Thanks a lot,
Thank guys.
You guys. And we'll
so
talk
much.
To everybody later and see you in Chicago.
Bye, guys. We played a bar in Kalamazoo called Louis' Trophy Room one time. And it's one of these bars where they have a main room and then there's a music room off to the side that has separate doors. And the doors shut and they're semi-soundproof. We did a two-set night and we took a break. And the whole time we'd been playing in the main bar area, they'd been doing karaoke the entire time.
Wow.